podcasting technology of normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com. And distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today. It is Thursday, September 27th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. A lot of folks have questions about the presidential candidates and their views on marijuana. We featured a lot of that content right here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. There are two very good websites in this regard. One is sendtherightmessage.com and the other is granitestaters.com for Granite Staters for medical marijuana. We'll have links to both of those websites at normalaudiostash.com today. But two presidential candidates, one Republican and one Democrat, have interviewed right here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. So we're going to revisit two of those interviews today. Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul has appeared here on the Audio Stash four times. Here's one of his interviews from May 24th. Today here on the Audio Stash, we're going to get the chance to speak with one of the candidates for U.S. President, Republican Ron Paul of Texas. Congressman Paul interviewed with us here in January, and he's currently a co-sponsor of the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. Congressman Paul has been particularly outspoken in his support for an end to the drug war. He supports medical marijuana, and he also supports an adult's right to choose their recreation, including smoking marijuana. You can hear Congressman Paul's January interview on the Audio Stash in our archive in the guest interviews section. We caught up with Congressman Paul during a busy week in Washington on Tuesday. Good afternoon, Congressman Paul. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Good to be with you.
And thank you again for taking time to speak with us today, Congressman. First, let's talk about a piece of federal legislation you're co-sponsoring, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. This bill has bipartisan support in Congress. You know, why do you think hemp is a good solution for us right now?
Well, you know, I approach this basically wanting to allow people to do what they want with their lives and with the economy. So it's a freedom issue with me, and it's senseless to prohibit the cultivation and the use of hemp. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It seems to me to be a hysterical reaction and an overreaction to the war on drugs. So I'm all for providing an economic alternative to some of the things that we need. Who knows? Some people even say that hemp can make ethanol better than corn, and here we are prohibiting it from being used. So I'm for the market determining these things and not the government. I just assume the government just stay out of it completely.
So the biofuels issue, that's something that's made hemp farming more poignant today.
Right, and it sort of helps us, and yet, you know, I think the narrow arguments are very, very important, and it sort of alerts people to the subject, but the larger issue is how do problems and solutions get solved? Is it with government regulation and prohibitions and subsidies? And too often in Washington, things like in energy, they're either totally subsidized and controlled by government and the special interest, or they're totally prohibited. And my view of what the government should be doing is providing a free environment for the markets to work and individuals to make their own free choices. So I think that's what we forget, and that's what I like to emphasize. But when the narrow argument of, you know, maybe hemp is useful, you know, maybe we could have jobs and maybe we could, you know, keep some jobs from going overseas, I think these are all important arguments, but to me they're secondary to freedom of choice.
And Congressman Paul, you're running for president, so let me ask, if you're in the White House, what changes could be in store at the DEA and the ONDCP? Would there be pressure from you in the Oval Office on the DEA to stop raids in California on medical marijuana dispensaries?
Yeah, and I think you'd have proper authority to do that. You direct the Justice Department on what they should be doing and shouldn't be doing, and I don't subscribe to the overriding of state laws by the federal government, you know, where if the federal government or a directive or a regulation or Congress or a court rules and they make a mistake, you know, it's just so overwhelming. So I think as president, I would just not prosecute. I would recognize and defend it under the Ninth and the Tenth Amendment, you know, that this is not permissible by the president to do this. And likewise on some of these laws, the laws I wouldn't sign into effect, and when it's a clear-cut opportunity, they should be challenged in court and work to get them thrown out, you know, in the best manner possible.
And Congressman, in regards to medical marijuana, we've seen a tremendous amount of science published on the topic. You know, would you, as president, have research done on medical marijuana?
Well, I wouldn't use taxpayers' money to do any research. I would just get the government out of the way and let people do what they want, and the medical profession should do the research necessary. And I think a lot would have been done by now if we'd have just gotten out of the way. But the prohibition is the worst part. But I don't think government studies are necessary. I think that enough people already know of the benefits, and people should be allowed to make their own choices. If they make a mistake, you know, they suffer the consequences. So, but it would be a tremendous incentive if they didn't think the government was there to tell them what is bad and what is good. You know, if it's the government to do the research and say, oh, this is good, it's the same principle as the government making a decision and saying it's bad. So I don't particularly want them to do either one. I want the burden of decision making be placed on the individuals and the communities and the parents and if anything, local government at the very most. But I don't think that studies to find out what's good or bad about any substance is a proper role for the federal government.
And Congressman Paul, as someone who's been an outspoken critic of the drug war and our current foreign policy decisions, you know, how much does domestic prohibition play into our foreign policy, do you think, you know, when it comes to military resources and the like?
Well, I think it's significant, but it's probably a mixed bag. You know, it requires a military operation, a lot of expenditures. Just think of what's going on in Colombia. We're talking about billions of dollars. But quite frankly, I think that is probably a cop-out. I don't think that's the real issue, though that's what they claim. I think that's the excuse for going in. The drug war is the excuse to go into certain areas for the benefit of maybe oil interests or something else. Same way in Afghanistan, you know, we're over there to get rid of the Taliban and stop these drugs from coming, but maybe could have more to do with a gas pipeline going through Afghanistan than anything else. But I think they're very much aware of how much money is in the drug war, how much is involved, and I think many governments, including our own CIA, see some benefit to raise money outside the normal circles. And I think the Iran-Contra affair indicated pretty strongly that our CIA was involved in actually using some of this money, drug money. So they, I wouldn't be surprised if they do this deliberately. But the massive number of people in the country, the voters and the politicians here in Washington, all are easily intimidated, and they easily believe, well, it's the government's responsibility. We have to protect children. We have to protect people against bad things. And they vote that way because they think they're helping, or even if they are convinced it's not helping, they're convinced they better because they think that they can't possibly ever be elected or reelected to government if they tell the truth about the drug war. And yet, that's one thing that I've been able to overcome, at least up until now. You know, in my district, they know where I stand, and I've always been very clear that the drug war is a lot worse than the drugs themselves. Yet, I've also had to convince the people in my district that I don't like drugs. I don't like illegal drugs. I don't even like most legal drugs, and point out that governments too often, and doctors, the medical profession, encourages overuse of prescription drugs, and here we now have our federal government doing mandatory mental health testing for every kid in school, and when they do some studies on this, they find out that about 10% of the kids are getting put on these drugs, and I think the evidence is strong that many kids on these drugs end up, you know, participating in violent acts. So this is what the government does with drugs in their, with all their good intentions, I think too often they end up doing a great deal of harm in the area which is called legal.
Now, many seek to treat medical marijuana out there as a nonprofit industry. That's the plan in New Mexico. And what's in place in Oregon, many are calling for that to be the case in California. But, you know, is medical marijuana as nonprofit, you know, could that indicate that all medicine in America could be nonprofit as well?
I wouldn't think so. The fact that marijuana is so prevalent, or could be or would be so prevalent, there probably wouldn't be any profit in it. So I think it would just become pretty well available to individuals that wanted to use it. But to use that as a way to talk about nonprofit medicine, no, people have to get paid for their services, and there has to be a pricing mechanism. Otherwise, nobody knows you know, how much services to provide or how many doctors to have. So the market has to work in pricing any service or any item. If you get rid of that, you invite a lot of problems. So a nonprofit approach to any medication, I think, is doomed to fail.
Now, that's very interesting, Congressman Paul, especially coming from your background as a medical doctor. Now, Congressman, we see that there is a stark racial disparity to prohibition enforcement in this country. You know, over 60% of U.S. counties arrest more people of color for marijuana alone, and some places even have more striking disparities like New York City and New York State. But do you think we've reached a point here where prohibition policy is simply a racist policy?
Well, I think it's turned into that, but I think it's always been a civil rights issue. It's your right to make your own choice about your life, and you make a bad choice, you have to suffer the consequences. So it's part of the liberal mentality that the government is our protector. So some liberals who don't like these laws against marijuana subscribe to laws that are, you know, they provide the economic safety net, and therefore the government is assumed to be their protector in economic sense. Well, why wouldn't it be logical to go to the next step and say, well, they're to protect us in a physical sense from what we eat and drink and smoke? And, of course, this is the same mentality that leads to the runaway legislation after 9/11. But it's not a brand new idea. It started with economics and then on personal liberties and now on physical safety after 9/11. And but I don't subscribe to that. I don't think the federal government should be a nanny state. But I think to win this fight, I think we all should be more consistent in arguing getting rid of the nanny state in all three areas, not just because one would lose credibility if they say, well, we want freedom of choice, you know, on the drugs we take, but nothing else. We don't want true freedom of choice in economic policy, and we don't want true freedom of choice, you know, when it comes to physical safety and security. So I think the principle has to be that the government is there to provide freedom, and freedom of choice and responsibilities fall on us in all the areas.
Now, Congressman, in your presidential run, the online polling following the MSNBC and Politico.com debate overwhelmingly declared you the winner of that debate. You know, let me ask here, you know, during our podcast, how much you think the internet and online media are perhaps beginning to affect politics.
You know, a lot of news these days first starts on the internet, and then the internet or the major media monitor the internet, and then sometimes that, you know, goes on and becomes mainstream in conventional media. And I think that's what's happening in the political sense, that we're getting tremendous attention on the internet, and lo and behold, now we're getting a lot of major calls from major news network, you know, much more so than I ever got before. So I think it plays significantly. I don't think that you can totally win a campaign that way, only on the internet. But it sure can get attention of the major media, and you can raise a lot of money. You can find supporters and volunteers. It's very, very big, much bigger now than it was even 4 years ago.
You've also been speaking about online freedom. You know, let me ask, are you a frequent internet user? How much are you online?
I constantly use it. It's my method of doing research and reading and finding public opinions, and I think it's fantastic. And also, I think what helps me on that is I am known for the greatest champion of keeping the internet totally free of government manipulation, which if you're in a conservative district like I am, it's a mixed bag because people are afraid you allow things on the internet that, you know, are taboo and they don't like, and in things that I wouldn't even endorse. But once again, I put the responsibility back on the individual and on the parents to monitor this and using the use of technology if there are things on the internet they don't like. But I don't want to tax the internet, and I don't want to ever regulate it. And when they did any surveys on voting patterns, I won that survey by a lot, that I'm the strongest defender of the internet. And I think young people are very much aware of that, and they like that position. For instance, I think one of the silliest things for people to do is lose money in gambling, yet I'm a champion of allowing you to make up your own mind just on what you smoke and drink. I think you should make up your own mind about whether you want to gamble or not, and if you lose money, you better not come crying to the government and say, oh, you know, I'm poor now, will you take care of me? I lost my shirt gambling on the internet. So freedom is great, but it does presume that individuals will assume responsibility for themselves, and that's the key to it.
Well, Congressman Paul, I know you're having a busy day there in Washington, D.C. I want to thank you again for taking time to speak with us here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Good to be with you.
Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul there in his May 24th interview here on the Audio Stash. We're going to speak with Congressman Paul again very soon here in the future. Also, early in the summer, Democratic presidential candidate Mike Gravel joined us here on the Audio Stash as well. This interview is from our June 12th broadcast.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Today on the Audio Stash, we get a chance to have a conversation with Democratic presidential candidate Mike Gravel. Mr. Gravel served two terms as U.S. Senator from Alaska and has been campaigning hard across the country and in debates for the Democratic nomination for U.S. President. He's the only presidential candidate so far to call for the outright legalization of marijuana. Senator Gravel, welcome here to Normal's Daily Audio Stash today.
Well, thank you very much for welcoming me to your stash.
Wonderful to speak with you today, Mr. Gravel. First, let me ask what this experience has been like for you of running for president.
Well, of course, running for president, it's like Jack Kennedy said, running for president is the tough part. Serving is going to be a cakewalk. And with respect to the debates, clearly, the mainline media, or many of the pundits, view me as the crazy uncle coming out of the attic after so many years out of office. But I look upon more like what Leah Iacocca, the title of his book, you know, where have all the leaders gone? Well, one is coming back, and he's running for president of the United States, and it's me.
Now, you've been very outspoken on the marijuana issue. You made a statement recently that you would favor the legalization of marijuana. Tell me, where does that belief come from?
Well, where does it come from? Because our whole drug policy is insane. You know, if I defy anybody in American culture to not realize that the whole Prohibition era was a failure in American democracy and criminalized untold numbers of people and brought about great disrespect for the law. Now, when you have a bad law and people don't obey it, well, it flows over to other areas. So where I come from, it is a realization from day one that the prohibition against marijuana and the problems with hard drugs is not a criminal problem. It's a public health problem, and we have to deal with it as a public health problem. And so here what we've done is we've filled our prisons full of people that shouldn't be there, and we've criminalized a substance that is not nearly as serious as alcohol in terms of addiction. And so people can go buy a fifth of booze and drink it all, and that will do 100 times more damage than marijuana. A similar quantity of marijuana would do. In fact, it's generally known that there are healing properties to the use of marijuana. So, and we spend as a nation anywhere from $50 to $70 billion a year on this whole prohibition of drugs, illegalization of drugs. We not only criminalize a lot of our people, but we destabilize countries like Mexico, Colombia, and Afghanistan, and you know, in our during the Vietnam era, our whole CIA was involved in some of this stuff. It's just pathetic, and what it's the religious right, by and large, that has been pushing this. People like Bennett and others, and they have their addictions. So I just think that somebody in running for president has got to make this an issue, so that and I think the American people would buy into it. That we don't need to do this, and we can begin to treat it as a public health problem.
So this is a long-standing position for you regarding marijuana legalization.
I felt this way essentially all of my adult career and have never been in a position to try to offer some leadership in that regard. And now that I'm running for president, for two reasons, one to end the war and the other is to empower people to become lawmakers. And so in this capacity, and this, I just stepped forward and trying to provide some leadership to change the direction of the country in this regard. That the American people are smart enough that if we face up this problem politically and nationally, that they will come down on the right side of this, and the right side being that we should decriminalize totally marijuana, make that as legal as alcohol, and that with respect to the rest of the drugs, that we should legalize their regulation. That then will help. Not only the money will save, we can now spend on helping people get rid of their addiction. But anybody that wants any hard drugs can go to a doctor, register, and then we can begin and then provide them with drugs that they don't have to go to the criminal element in society to get their drugs. So that changes the whole dynamic. It puts the government in the position of trying to help people rather than trying to imprison them. And they come out of prison. We've now taught them how to be criminals. They come out of prison, and then they go commit crimes to sustain their habit. That's absolutely ridiculous and suicidal from a social, sociological point of view. So that's as much as I know on the Alaska side. I do know that there have been some studies that show, and quite lengthy studies, 12 years, where there's been no trace of proving that marijuana, the use of marijuana or cannabis, that would lead to addiction to hard drugs. It's totally here. Drinking four martinis or one martini, two martini lunch doesn't lead to alcoholism any more than smoking or enjoying marijuana, whether it's in brownies or other forms.
Senator Gravel, you've been outspoken about the Iraq conflict as well. stating that you would immediately bring the troops home. Let me ask, how much do you think prohibition has played into the kind of power taking we've seen in the last 7 years that has created this whole foreign policy situation?
I don't know, and that's a very good question. I do know this, that the interrelationship of issues that limit our freedom, and these have been on the increase, obviously, you know, with the attitude towards war, the fear that's induced by the military-industrial complex for the last 50 years in our society. Because if you can keep society living in fear, you can sell them almost anything for their protection. We see this with the extent, or the overblown extent, of Homeland Security. And so fearing drugs, and of course the whole drug program creates criminals. So now you got to fear these criminals that are pushing drugs or on drugs or what have you. And then of course the answer to that is you've got a problem on the streets, so you now got to empty the streets out, put everybody in jail. Here, think of the shame of our democracy that we have more people, 2.3 million people in jail, more than any other country in the world. And we're supposed to be a free country. So no, I think, Chris, it interrelates, and I keep saying this, that what we need is a president that calls upon the courage in all of us. And the reason why I use courage, which is so important, because that's how we can implement the rest of our virtues. Now, FDR, you know, faced a similar problem, very similar. He's the one that ended Prohibition, and also he's the one that called upon the people to put their fear aside. There's no reason to have the amount of fear we have in this country, fear of terrorists, fear of gays, fear of people of color, just fear of immigrants, fear of communists. There's just no end of this. And, of course, their response is, well, we got to do a war on this, war on terrorism, war in Iraq, war in Afghanistan. And now we want to, many of these same people want to do a war in Iran. There's just no end to this whole approach. And so back to your original point, is this all interrelated? I sure think it is.
And Senator Gravel, you talk very strongly about leadership. We don't see our elected officials taking on some of the most important yet controversial topics like prohibition or poverty reduction or even health care outside of some electioneering. Is that something you find pervasive in American politics right now among all the parties?
Yes, it is. And it's difficult, you know, since leaving office, I've really kept myself informed, and I'm a theorist, and so I've developed this legislation to empower the American people by being able to make laws. But I don't have a magic answer for that. I really don't. It's a thoughtful question. I have thought about it extensively, and the only answer that I can come up with, because I come to this conclusion, there's only two venues for possible change. You want to improve our society. You want to improve the nature of representative government. And so how politicians act is really dictated by the way representative government works. And politicians learn early on that if you take on controversial subjects, you're going to alienate one of two parties. And so you learn the art politically of not taking on controversial subjects, which means you don't advance society by providing thoughtful solutions that then can be discussed at length within the polity, but you stay away from that. And so what politicians learn, and this is a bit of a cliche joke, is that, you know, a person who's really commanded the art, and I did in my heyday, my salad days when I was in the Senate, is you can tell people to go to hell and make them look forward to the trip. That's a politician. And so now what we have to do is recognize that it's the structure of representative government that does it. A politician wants to please generally. They want to serve. And we get a lot of good people to go into politics and public service, and we need a lot more. But what happens is the longer they're there, the more they enjoy the heady wine of power. And power corrupts. It corrupts everybody. And so we have a problem, and that's the reason why I'm so strong on term limits, is that if power corrupts, then we have to limit the amount of time any elected official has it, or a judicial official. I would put term limits on the one term for the president, 12 years for senators, 12 years for House members, but make their terms 4 years rather than two, and then term limits on the entire judicial system, that the including the Supreme Court, 12 years, and you're up and you're out. This way, you turn over the leadership of the country. We'll never get back to what many thought we should have, just citizen elected officials. No, life is too complex now in our society. But what we can do is turn over the number of people that serve and use power, so that you have a continuous influx. What I've noticed as an elected official is that most, and this is what I've observed in the Senate historically and in my own case, most of the people do all of their great work in their first term, first 6 years. I did it in 4 years. And so after that, you're sitting there trying to keep your power. You're careful what you have to say because you're afraid that people will vote against you and throw you. And I was not careful. I was a maverick. I just continued, and I don't know why I'm like that. I am. All I got to do is try to see if I can't persuade, at least now in the Democratic race, enough Democrats to get me the primary nomination. And I think I would have an opportunity, and then I'm positive I could eat all of these Republican lunches that are standing up and talking about warmongering, talking about fear. I think the American people are ready for a new dialogue in that regard. Now, will I get elected? It all depends on the people. I've made a calculation. I'd like to be president. I think I could do an unbelievable job there. But I also think it's more important to have the people empower themselves than just empower Mike Gravel, to empower themselves to make laws, because I'll be long gone, and that power will really operate to the benefit of our society.
Well, Senator Gravel, this has been a great conversation here today. I cannot thank you enough for taking time. Senator Mike Gravel is running for the Democratic nomination for U.S. President. We have links to his website on our website today at normalaudiostash.com. Let's get to some music today from the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. Here's Barrington Levy with Ragamuffin from the original Ragamuffin CD. And Barrington Levy will probably be on stage for the Stony Awards in Los Angeles on October 14th. More information about the High Times Normal Stony Awards right up on our website today at normalaudiostash.com.
Give thanks and praise every day, my sisters. No matter where you go, Jah Jah always there with you. Anything you say, Jah Jah always hearing you. Anything you do, Jah Jah is watching you. Sing, Ragamuffin. Ragamuffin, 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 stop your loafing. Ragamuffin, 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 stop your shooting. The food
ragamuffin, stop your huffing. Ragamuffin, stop your loafing. Give thanks and praise every day, my brethren. Give thanks and praise every day, my sisters. Anywhere you go, God is there with you. Ragamuffin, 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 stop your loafing. Ragamuffin, 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 stop your loafing. Whoa, whoa, see, whoa. Everything you do, don't you know that is what you do? Everything you say, that is airing you. Of all the workers of iniquity, no knowledge. Who eat up all my people's flesh as they eat bread? Dem a ragamuffin, stop your huffing. Ragamuffin, stop your looting. Ragamuffin, stop your huffing. Ragamuffin, stop your shooting. Ragamuffin, ragamuffin.
Barrington Levy there with the original Ragamuffin from the Independent Online Distribution Alliance. You can catch him on stage live at the Normal High Times Stony Awards in Los Angeles on October 14th.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Listening to NORML's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's NORMLAUDIOSTASH.com for more information about every day's show. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 420 tomorrow.